This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to this Joy podcast. I'm Chris, members admin volunteer for 20 years. We need your support to continue providing this podcast service. Please become a member or make a donation at joy.org.au.
Broadway icon John Cameron Mitchell channels the essence of his glam rock icon, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, for one night only at Arts Centre Melbourne this July. So put on some makeup, turn up the A-track and pull the wig down from the shelf. John Cameron Mitchell, July 10 at Arts Centre Melbourne. Book now. Joy sponsor.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine every Saturday 10 till 12.
And you are listening to Saturday Magazine with Macca and Tass.
Indeed you are. In case it had escaped you, the National Gallery of Victoria has another wonderful, exceptional exhibition. The museum.
Any more adjectives, Macca?
Look, it's a fantastic gallery. I think it's the best gallery in Australasia, if not this hemisphere. The Museum of Modern Art have lent the NGV an incredible part of their collection. And Miranda Wallace, who's the senior curator, international exhibition projects at the NGV, joins us. Good morning, Miranda.
Hi, Tess. Hey, how are you, Macca?
Very well, very well. How many pieces in total is it?
Well, we say over 200. I think when we did a tally, it's about 220. It's hard sometimes because you have pieces, well, you know, works that are made up of lots of individual work. But we're going with over 200.
And look, I have to disclose, I work for a company that is one of your principal partners. I'm not going to name them, but this relationship we have with the NGV is hugely important. We value it a lot because one of the things that's important in art and in exhibitions is freedom of expression, and you couldn't get some more freer expressions than what you're getting in this exhibition. Give us an idea of the breadth of it, Miranda, because it really, it's 150 years worth, isn't it?
130, yeah. It starts in the 1880s, and I think the first book's 1886, and then the most recent is 2016. Mm. So, you know, you're seeing, you know, not only a vast change in that period in terms of what art looks like and what people actually think art is. I mean, the world changes obviously so much in that time. And what I love about the exhibition and what we can do with it is we can talk about those changes in art, but also in the broader social and political kind of context. And so, you know, it's really, you know, you can unpack it as much as you want, if you like. It's a beautiful visual, the unfurling of what, you know, artists have been doing and interested in over this time. Obviously very different in the 1880s, but it's surprising to see, you know, some of the connections and some of how long ago some of our contemporary concerns actually arose. You know, the kind of the relationship between new technology and art and how artists deal with new technology and the way it's changing a landscape is present in the very first work of the exhibition, because that's a great painting by Seurat, and you can see industrial structures in a landscape there, and then you can see it most recently in you know, work that's dealing with architecture of refugee camps and what the actual kind of structures of our, you know, places that we call home are and how people think of them. So it's hugely varied.
Miranda, it's Tass here. I saw the show last week, and I did talk about it on this show because for me it was just an absolute delight. It's one of the best shows I've seen in a long time.
Great.
And but it took me right back to the time when I was studying Year 12, and I don't know if it's still around, but there was an art history book written by Gombrich. Every Year 12 student had it, and it took me straight back to that because it was a little bit like a roll call of every artist I'd ever studied or thought about or read about or seen their work. So it was...
Well, so true, yeah.
Truly.
My collection has some of those pieces that are always reproduced in the art history textbooks.
That's
so, like,
right.
The Mondrian, you know, and it's wonderful to see them, when you see them actually as objects, not simply as a flat reproduction, because they have a very different presence, I think. And, you know, you can see the actual brushstrokes that there's just, you know, you don't expect to see in some of those works, which is fantastic.
That's exactly right. And as well as cruising around the gallery, there was quite a crowd outside the Dali, the timepiece Dali, and the overwhelming comment was how small it was.
It is. It's tiny. It's unexpectedly small. And it's even though it is small, the detail of it is also so packed in that you have to get really up close to it. And you see the signature, his writing on the bottom. It looks like he's had to do it with a magnifying glass because it's so tiny. But he manages to almost make this tiny paint jewel of a painting luminous. It seems to project its own light, that the way the sunlight across the cliffs at the top of the painting, you know, it's so evocative. You know, this is his famous Melting Clocks painting, which is a motif that he picks up and he reuses because it's so, you know, it is so important, such an important image. But this is like the original work where you see that.
And every student of the arts knows that piece. Every student, and even those people who are not interested in the arts.
That's right.
And Dali know this piece. And there was this massive crowd and the note of disappointment was massive. Because everybody expected it to be larger than life, and here it was tiny.
Well, we always expect things to be huge today, and yet when you look at the works in the first part of the show, you know, often where they were created for, you know, for collectors, I guess, who put them in houses. Yes. So they're not designed for the massive museums that we're used to today. So work gets progressively larger as you come to the contemporary. It's certainly true.
They were, Tash, they were created to be displayed in a salon.
Yes, yes, in people's homes.
Miranda, one of the things that I found fascinating, and I am returning to the exhibition I went, obviously, the other night, but is, you know, that it is bang up to date. So there's a lot of, I'll call it digital part of the exhibition, and I think that's, you know, this is one of the wonderful things about it. What NGV does is, you know, we often talk about Joy is 25 years old. That's one generation, even though there's three generations of folk pretty much working here. But the gallery, you know, your exhibitions, and I'm not quite sure how you pull this off, but you do, there is something for every generation in all of your exhibitions. I think that's...
Well, we really are conscious of making sure that we do appeal across generations. I mean, I think museums, you know, there was a time, I guess, when what they did became, you know, like if they were increasingly showing, repeating what they were doing, they were kind of getting a progressively aging audience. And much as that is a very important, being an older audience is a hugely important part of our audience, we also want to make sure that we are inviting younger visitors in so that they will set up a lifetime of visiting art and appreciating art and having art in their lives. And that's why our children's exhibitions are so, you know, important. And we've got a great New York exhibition associated with our MoMA show, which I think will probably set up for many kids the desire to go to New York, because it's like a kind of wonderful miniature version of this vertical city, and, you know, like it's got the sounds and landscape of New York City.
Now, Miranda, what does it feel like to have in your hands these amazing pieces of work by these amazing historical artists, you know, whether it be Dali or Warhol or Dynabis or Georgia O'Keeffe or, you know, the Pollocks or the Rothkos? What does it feel like?
Well, it feels like a dream, really, actually, for me. I mean, it's a huge responsibility having these works here, but it's such a joy to share them with our audiences. And, I mean, it's incredible that MoMA actually let so many of them come here. I think that their generosity in this exhibition is extraordinary, because they really have let come to the other side of the world works that people often visit MoMA to see. So, you know, we're very conscious of that privilege of having them here. And really, I mean, what I love about this show is that it allows you to see in this one sort of experience such an arc of modern art development, which, much as the NGV has a brilliant collection, you know, we're a much older museum than MoMA, but we, in terms of that middle period of the 20th century, no one can really compare to MoMA's collection. So you just, you know, you can't see this sort of history anywhere else.
Well, I know, having a brief chat to a couple of the MoMA people, it came here because of their respect and their regard for the NGV.
Well, we do have a great rapport with them, I think, and, you know, I think we have a shared sort of passion for connecting people with art. And I think that, you know, MoMA does that brilliantly. And it's something that, you know, NGV really, you know, it is what makes us do what we do every day.
Miranda, the obvious rapport between MoMA's director and the NGV's director and the Victorian Premier on the opening night was just electric, absolutely electric.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah, it was fantastic. I know.
Brilliant speeches.
And it's just so it seems so easy among them that it's just a wonderful collaboration for everybody, really, and that's because of that great relationship.
It is.
Miranda, thank you very much for your time. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, so we do need to move on. Great work with the National Gallery and keep it up.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Make sure, listeners, you get down there and have a look at it. This is an exhibition. If you don't see it, you'll regret it because you may never get to see it again.
Hi, this is John Borghetti, the CEO of Virgin Australia. Just like Joy 94.9, we are flying high and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.